This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For most of us, life gets even more hectic at this time of the year. Endless to-do lists, long lines at the post office, long hours at work, chauffeuring the kids around, parties you have to go to and parties you have to give. Shopping for food and cooking a family dinner can seem like just another chore. So we thought we could all benefit from some fast food. No, we're not talking Mickey D's. Food writer and television star Nigella Lawson has a new book out called Nigella Express, which offers 130 recipes for those who love to cook but have little time to do it. She joins us in just a moment. Later in the program, the movie version of the bestseller The Kite Runner opened this weekend. Set in 1970s Kabul, it's the story of a man atoning for a childhood sin. We'll talk about how the movie portrays Afghanistan, the last 30 years of its history, with Peter Bergen, and take your calls later in the program. But first, Nigella Express. If you'd like to talk with Nigella Lawson about cooking and how to manage those holiday dinner menus without losing your hair, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Nigella Lawson's new book is called Nigella Express, and she hosts a television show on the Food Network of the same name. She joins us from the BBC's Western House in London, and it's nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
It's always lovely to be with you.
And one of the things I admire about your books is plain speaking, and it was a revelation to see a cook admit that planning and shopping are often the most stressful part of dinner.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think it's incredibly hard to find the time to get everything you need. And sometimes it just feels that the list of tasks is endless. I mean, I rather like food shopping, but I can't do it terribly well in a very full working day. But I've learnt to make it do with rushing out at lunchtime, getting a good store of things that will be there if I haven't got time to go shopping. And I suppose I do what many women do everywhere, which is I make lists ad infinitum.
And you shop a lot on the internet, you say?
I do, but I have a very bad internet habit, and I don't suppose everyone else to be so weak. It's a very dangerous thing to get into, because of course if you shop and you don't have to carry what you're buying, you can buy many things you don't really need because someone else is going to carry it for you. I mean, it makes a slight difference that I work at home, so I don't have that problem with is someone going to be there to let in all the groceries. But I do, I mean, I shop enormously on the internet. It's particularly good, I'd say, for those specialist products or fresh produce even that we might not get normally, you know, in the centre of town.
Those recondite items that were sometimes a little difficult to find.
But can make all the difference. And sometimes buying a particular ingredient means that you have got the wherewithal to do something that is impressive but that doesn't take an awful lot of energy. So it's about using what's scarce to save what's even scarcer, namely time.
And you also said your life has gotten a lot easier since you've admitted to yourself that the pre-chopped fruit and veg is okay.
Yes, I mean, I do feel the shade of my late mother absolutely berating me because it would have shocked her, partly because she was a child in the Second World War, therefore brought up with rationing, which I don't believe you had.
Not to the same degree, no.
Not to the same degree. So therefore, it was very much the idea of the waste and the unnecessary expense you get from chopping. I'm afraid I came to accept it through a rather spurious little path, which is I was in the Rialto Market in Venice, which is one of the most beautiful displays of food ever, and you can possibly see. I mean, it's absolutely astonishing. And of course, the Italians are very, very precise about their food and how it's prepared. And I saw a lady manning the pumpkin stall. As you know, in Europe, they have those fabulous stalls which have only one bit of produce.
And they're assembled by architects somehow.
Yes, and they're extraordinary, much better than any still life. And yet she had peeled and chopped some for those customers who didn't have time for that themselves. And I thought, well, if it's good enough for the Italians, I am no longer going to balk.
Our guest is Nigella Lawson. Her new book is Nigella Express. I have to say, one of the first recipes I turned to, I am not much of a cook, though I do it from time to time, but I saw your recipe for calamari with garlic mayonnaise, and I have to say I was a little taken aback to see that you include Old Bay seasoning.
Yes.
Where does a Brit like you find out about Old Bay seasoning?
Well, the thing is that what seems to you very normal, you've got to understand, for me, has this fabulous touch of the exotic. So when I go abroad, I always go food shopping. You know, some people spend many mornings in museums and art galleries, but actually I'm in markets. And I first brought back a little tin of this stuff because I found the tin itself so enchanting. It wasn't even knowing how delicious it was. And I suppose that's, in a way, if you like, a sort of form of tourism that I find, in a way, very agreeable, which is bringing something back, somehow making it part of your own rituals, even though it's a borrowed technique or a borrowed ingredient. So I suppose I'd say that although I don't go full out on fusion, I certainly think that through travels or through reading, which often is the way we travel as well, you can pick up little hints or an idea from overseas. So I love that.
Most people around these parts, and of course we're broadcasting in Washington, D.C., and up in Baltimore, Annapolis, the whole eastern shore, have these wonderful crab restaurants where you get, they just dump out a dozen of them on your table is just covered with brown paper, and you crack them open with a hammer. And the way you know when you've had enough is when there's so much Old Bay seasoning under your fingernails, you can't stand it anymore.
That's such a fabulous picture. And when I've seen and eaten crab in the States, it is so much huger than the crab I come across here. I mean, it looks to me as if it's from some 1950s, you know, science fiction B-movie with, you know, a crab that could take over the world. They're so huge.
And watermen, of course, would say, well, back in my day where they were much bigger. Anyway, now let's get some callers
in. They still taste good.
They're still very good. Get some callers in on this conversation. Again, our guest is Nigella Lawson. Her new book and her new television program is Nigella Express. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Sophie's with us. Sophie calling us from Douglas, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the
hello.
Air.
Oh, hello, Nigella. I am shopping right now to make your chocolate fruitcake that you made on your show 2 weeks ago, and I'm going to be serving it at my party on Wednesday evening.
Oh, that's so nice. It's such an easy fruitcake. And, you know, I think that in the States people have got a real down on fruitcake because you think it's very dry. And this fruitcake is almost more of a pudding. It's so moist and damp and dark.
Oh, I know. After I saw you make it, I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, our fruitcakes are such a joke here, but this is just going to be wonderful.
Well, I'm really pleased. I'll tell you a funny story about that. When I was filming it, my cameraman, who I always work with, said, ugh, prunes, I hate them. And I said, do you mind? I was very, very cross with him. And then he ate it afterwards and he said, that is just the best fruitcake I've ever had. And he asked for the recipe to give his wife. So I felt I triumphed.
Well, hopefully others will make your recipe this season and enjoy that. Thank you.
And
good luck with the fruitcake, Sophie. Don't tell your guests what it is until after they've eaten it.
Good point.
I won't, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And let's try now to go to John. John's with us. John's calling from Sacramento.
Good afternoon, Nigella. How are you?
I'm very well. I hope you are, too.
I'm doing very well. I do the same thing with HP sauce as you do with Old Bay.
Oh, I'm really...
I bring a bottle back with me.
And do you know why it's called HP sauce?
Yes, because of the House of Parliament.
Exactly.
Really?
Yes.
So anyway, my comment is on what I really appreciate about your books and your show is your freedom with ingredients and using them in... unconventional ways sometimes, and also your ability to use kind of corny techniques that may be old-fashioned or something that your mother would have done, and you just make it so practical and cool that my wife and I, we really, really enjoy
oh,
watching
thank
your
you.
Shows and reading your books.
That's a lovely thing to say. I mean, I have to say, I think that I'm not a chef. I mean, not by a long chalk. I'm just an ordinary family home cook, and I think that that's what everyone understands, because cooking at home isn't the same thing as in a restaurant. You can use the past and you don't have to be, you know, always dizzyingly novel.
Right. And cooking at home leads me to my last comment, and that is your trip at the end of each show to the refrigerator in your in your robe? Is that something you actually do? Because it's definitely something I do after a good dinner.
I certainly do, and sometimes I'm afraid I don't even wait to get my robe in. I'm just still wrapped in my bath towel.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you
so much.
Happy to
talk to you.
John, before you go...
Yes, sir.
A lot of her recipes also call for something called golden syrup. I lived in England for a few years, so I know what gold. I know what the package looks like anyway.
Yes, we have golden syrup as well. It's a green and gold can.
That's right. Beautiful can.
Yeah. It's so golden syrup is one of... I've been enlightened in all of these things.
Golden syrup is heavenly. I'm glad you appreciate it.
Oh, I do. I love it very much.
Thanks very much, John.
Bon appetit.
And you.
And goodbye. I also wanted to mention, clearly not a trained chef. A trained chef would never say, look, I've got a recipe for chocolate mousse, and we could skip all those silly egg yolk things and go right into melting marshmallows.
Yes. I mean, I certainly make chocolate mousse in the conventional manner as well, but I first made my quick chocolate mousse, my instant chocolate mousse, with marshmallows. Funnily enough, not because I just had to be speedy, because someone didn't want their children eating raw eggs, which I understand.
Yeah.
And if you melt marshmallows, you get the gelatin from that and it sets the mousse. But strangely, it gives it an enormously silky fullness in the mouth that is perfectly agreeable without it having to be, if you like, a safety device. You just want to go for it straight away and you don't have to wait for it to set. So if you suddenly got people coming for supper, you know, you can make it before you sit down to eat. It doesn't have to sit for a day in the fridge.
Would you go so far as to recommend, I'm not even sure they make it anymore, marshmallow fluff?
I haven't tried it. They do make it. I mean, I think it would be a very expensive way round of doing it. And I think there may be even more sugar in marshmallow fluff than in marshmallows. But if anyone wants to give it a try.
If you're looking at an empty fridge, a full schedule, and an upcoming dinner party, we've got Just the Cook for You. Nigella Lawson is with us. You can send us email. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can also call us 800-989-8255. Back with more Talk with Nigella Lawson in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with food writer and television star Nigella Lawson this hour, and just in time, as we're all struggling to eat something other than candy canes this season. If you haven't been taking notes on the conversation, you can find Nigella's Eat and Run breakfast ideas, as well as recipes for glazed salmon and instant chocolate mousse, at our website, npr.org/talk. And if you want a little direct advice from Nigella herself, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. And one of the things I also like about your book is the line, only have a starter, an appetizer, if it makes life easier for you. A lot of people feel compelled if they're having people over for dinner. Well, that's one of the courses.
I know. I do think people have not quite updated how they think about entertaining. And I think people act as if they're giving some grand ambassadorial dinner with many courses and a huge process of, little knives here and then put something out there and it's all different. And you sometimes, unless you have a huge array of china, I mean, sometimes you have to get up and wash plates and crockery in the middle of a meal. And I think that people work much longer hours than they used to, so that it means you don't get home till so late, and we all get up early for work. And so I think that two courses is fine. I think what makes people feel relaxed often is something to pick at over drinks. But really, no one really needs to have three courses in the evening, or even at lunchtime. I think you've just got to liberate yourself and think, what makes it easy for me, and also what makes it comfortable for my friends?
You also note the idea is to have a good time when your friends are over for dinner.
Yes.
And even if you mess dinner up, it doesn't mean you're going to have a bad time.
Not at all. And I think that we've all either given dinners or gone to them where someone has been so stressed that the tension in the room is palpable. And really, you could have the best meal you've ever eaten in your life, but in that atmosphere, it's not going to taste so good. So really, I mean, I always, amuse people when I say, look, I'm a food writer, but I really think that if the food is the most important thing at your house, something's wrong, because conversation and just the mood of a room really are very important, and the food should facilitate that. It shouldn't get in the way of that.
Let's get some more callers on the line. This is Dawn. Dawn with us from Louisville in Kentucky.
Hi, Nigella. I just want to say I absolutely love you. I have been hooked ever since, and I'm collecting your cookbooks, apparently. Your newest one is on my Christmas list, and it's funny. My boyfriend says that you and I are lost twins. We look similar. We cook in the same fashion and have the same approach to foods.
Your boyfriend is a lucky man.
Accent.
And the funny thing is one of your recipes, the Coca-Cola ham,
yes,
has become a holiday tradition. I cannot stop making it. If I did, there's a revolt.
Oh, that's very good. You should try my version I do as well with cherry Coke.
Oh, my son wants me to try it with root beer and orange soda and all these things.
Well, I think orange might be too strong, but I have tried it, and I think it went out on one of the holiday programs I did. I did also do it with dry ginger. You know, we call it ginger ale. I think that the marriage of salty ham and some sort of sweet preserve is a very traditional one, and we're just using, if you like, a rather convenient way of bringing this about.
Oh, and it's so easy. Everybody's like, oh, that is so good. How do you do that? And you drown the ham in Coke and you cook it.
You know, most cooking, a lot of cooking is like that. I think a lot of professionals often, well, maybe they have to make it more complicated, but when people say to me, how do you make it so simple? I just have to say, well, is that simple? Really? I mean, it's no trick, is it? It's just...
Right. And all of your recipes, I mean, that's what I love about them. And it's something that everybody can eat that is so simple. My goal this past year was to try more recipes, and I've tried several things out of the cookbook and everything, and everything just turns out wonderfully, and I just absolutely love it.
Oh, well, thank you.
Dawn, thanks for the call, and good luck with your cherry Coke ham next time around.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's go to, this is Matt. Matt with us from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Wow.
Hello?
Hi, Matt, you're on the air.
Yeah, I guess that kind of answered my question. I was wondering what a good, fun way to cook some meat for, you know, about 6-7 people would be this holiday. And I'm unfortunately not like the rest of your callers. I'm only familiar with you from listening to NPR.
Well, that's fine. So, I mean, that's a good way to cook it. I still think that the best way to cook meat is always the simplest. And there's something I do an awful lot, which is from an earlier book, but I think it still fits into my express philosophy, because although it cooks for so long, it actually requires no time from you to do the cooking. And that's that I roast pork sometimes, admittedly for more than about 8 people, but I get a whole shoulder of pork and I cook it for 24 hours, and that is in a really, really low oven. But certainly, if you got, say, a 9-pound joint of pork, and you put the spices of your choice all over the skin, make sure you score it with a knife, by which I mean, you know, do thin lines in the skin as if you were going to play noughts and crosses. Yep. And then put it in I'd say 325 oven, or even 300 oven, for 5-6 hours. Even if you did it for 12 hours, it would still be heavenly. And it just melts and is extraordinary. And you really don't do anything.
We call noughts and crosses, of course, tic-tac-toe.
Tic-tac-toe.
Well, I wonder how that Coke would work with moose.
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
Well,
tic-tac-toe.
We'll find out. Yeah, Merry Christmas.
And
thanks,
you.
Matt.
Do you remember that line that Bernard Shaw, was it Bernard Shaw? It was George Bernard Shaw who said, two nations divided by a common language.
Yes, I believe it was, yes. Here's an email from a mom. My precious but finicky 10-year-old daughter is a self-proclaimed vegetarian and has been for over a year now, which would be fine, but she also detests recognizable vegetables, both raw and cooked. She's not fond of fish and is worried about mercury and seafood, torture of egg-laying hens. You get the idea. I'm a working single mom who has little time for and no natural talent for cooking. I've tried to make a big batch of veggie lasagna, for example. She'll eat it the first night, but never again. On the other hand, she'd eat chocolate until it oozed out of her ears. Please help.
Oh, I wish I could. As someone with children, I really have every sympathy, because children are really the sternest critics and the fussiest eaters. I find my children will eat all manner of vegetables in soup, and really getting them to eat anything green otherwise is a bit of an uphill struggle. I also think that children have a natural leaning towards carbohydrates, and who can blame them? So I think I do something I call a white bean mash, which I buy cans of white beans and I drain them and I heat them up with a little bit of olive oil, and you know, if your child will have garlic, good, but otherwise olive oil, a bit of salt, and then I just use a wooden spoon and slightly make a nubbly mash in the pan as it heats up, 3 minutes or so, and then you can think, at least with pulses, your child is getting some protein as well. And pasta, you know, obviously you probably don't need me to tell you, but if I didn't have pasta and pesto on my weekly menu, I would have a much harder life. But I think it is difficult, because although children love repetition, they only like repetition when it makes it nice for them, and when it makes your life easier, somehow they get bored. And there's no way around that, I'm afraid. It's really a question of trying to freeze things in small things, so you bring things out of the freezer the next week. In the old days, I remember going, when I was a very small child, to my grandparents' house, and you could tell what day of the week it was by what you ate when you went there, because my grandmother had a rigid timetable that, for example, meant roast meat on Sunday, some sort of chopped up meat thing on Tuesday, and it went on like that. But actually, it makes your life easier if you do that. It feels very, very dull, but it probably is the only way to feed children without going mad.
Let's talk with Kevin. Kevin with us from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Nigella. I just want to tell you that my partner and I love your cookbooks and your show, and we cook your food often.
Thank you.
I have something. You went to the Godolphin and Latimer Academy, is that correct?
One of the many schools I went to. I'm afraid I was a very naughty girl when younger, so I went to more schools than my parents would have liked.
Well, my cousin is Bill Vellutini, who actually was...
Oh, yes. I love Mr. Vellutini.
Yeah, and if
indeed,
if I'm correct,
I must just quickly say that he was my English teacher at school, and he was wonderful. And we have a different way of doing it, but it's like at the highest part of school before you go to university, and I did English, which meant Shakespeare. We did Antony and Cleopatra together, the Shakespeare, and Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, and he was a very, very important force in my life.
Well, that will mean the world to him, because he's...
And he's he's brilliant at mending china, I remember.
He is, and he's just a wonderful man, and
yes.
He told me stories about taking you to school before, and he always...
He did. He used to pick me up. His partner worked in Harrods,
and he used
to pick me up from the bus stop on the way to dropping his partner to work. It was fabulous.
Yes. Well, I'll tell them you said hello, and they're both...
Please
doing
send
well.
My love, and say thank you.
I had a question. Oh, of course I will. Of course I will.
Yes.
I have a question for you, though. He said his mother was a wonderful cook. Is that correct?
Yes, she was.
What was one of the favorite things that she made that you liked?
Well, it sounds so undynamic, really, but she used to make a really fabulous poached chicken with rice and egg and lemon sauce, and the egg and lemon sauce was really like a French hollandaise sauce, and it had a bit of saffron in, and so in other words, she put egg yolks in a double boiler and beat in more butter than people would really want you to be using now. I obviously have no problem with that, and add lemon and saffron, and then at the very end a ladleful of the stock, that the broth that the chicken had been poached in. And for me, it's like a food that doesn't really exist anymore, because any form of poached or boiled food always sounds very unexciting for people, because everything has
very traditionally English, then.
It's traditional, well, with a bit of French in as well, you know, a sort of a bit of a hybrid, as indeed my family are. And so that I really loved.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll send Bill your love.
Please do.
I will. All right, bye-bye now.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Kevin. Here's an email from David in Des Moines. Many recipes will note the amount of time it takes to prep and cook a dish. It always seems to take me at least twice as long as the recipe indicates. Can you explain why this is? And are the recipes in Nigella Express really going to save me time?
Right. I can easily explain that I think that if people are not used to cooking, it can make them hesitant. And I think it is probably true to say that... the more we do things, the faster we get. We do it almost in automatic. Mm. So I can see that if you're doing a recipe that you haven't approached before, or it uses a method you haven't approached before, it might take a bit longer. I'm pretty brutal. I even add on time. I mean, it's certainly true that I do everything at very dangerously high speed. But when I do a book, I also try and make sure always that I am edited by someone who doesn't cook a lot, because I think it's very good to have normal queries and people who are perhaps not so, I don't want to say at ease in the kitchen, but certainly not so used to being in the kitchen. I really think that all my timings, if anything, err on the side of saying, well, this takes longer than it might take. But you always have to build in, quite apart from the prep time, you have to build in that ovens are very different. And it always frightens me when I cook in other people's ovens how one recipe is so different in their kitchen than it might be in mine. But if anything, things take longer in mine because I use a gas oven and not an electric oven. So at least, if anything, things will be ready faster in a more modern oven, perhaps. But, you know, I love a gas oven. And you can see, if you were to look at any of the recipes in my new book, you can actually see all the steps and you can see how simple they are. I mean, I don't even have to peel an onion in this book.
One of your recommendations in the pork chop recipe is to take the pork chops, put them between two plastic pieces of plastic, and then smash them briefly but brutally to make them thinner. I like that very much. We're talking with Nigella Lawson, her new book, Nigella Express, 130 Recipes for Good Food Fast. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk now with Diane. Diane with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, nice to speak to you. I'm a huge fan of your show. And
thank you.
One of the things that I just love about it is the very poetic way you describe the food as you're interacting with it. You're not just cooking it. It's like you're having an affair with it.
Well, I don't know about having an affair with it, but carry on.
I absolutely love it, and I love your show. And are you going to be on Food Network again?
Well, I think I've had a show that's just been going on. I've just done a 13-part show that started in the fall, so it must have just got to the end.
Right.
I mean, the thing is, well, there's sort of two things I'd say to you. One is that I don't come to this from a food background, really. I started off as a journalist and a literary journalist at that.
Right.
And so the words interest me a lot. Also, I don't use a script, which makes people anxious, but I think it's always better to have the odd mumbling and umming and awing, but actually just talk from the heart and straight out there. But one of the reasons why the shows look good, it's nothing to do with me, it's because they are filmed a bit like a movie. And so that for one show that may be 21 minutes, it's almost, it's 4 days filming. So that it's quite difficult for me to do enormous numbers, and I feel that because my children aren't terribly old, I can't take them to school and pick them up when I'm filming, so I only really film 13 shows a year, and that's really my maximum.
Right. Well, as they get older, I hope to see more of you, and just know that we in America just love the way you present it, and I can tell that you're a writer. You know, it's beautiful to listen to and fun to watch, and it's a delight to talk to you today.
It's lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Diane.
Thank you much. You bet. Bye.
One part you admit that the shows leave out is that you're obsessive about some things in the kitchen.
Well, I think I couldn't do what I do unless I were obsessive about things in the kitchen. I don't know what you're going to ask me. I feel slightly apprehensive. But I certainly, I'm not obsessively neat or anything helpful like that. But I...
You're note-taking.
Oh, my note-taking, yes, and such illegible notes at that. Not only note-taking, and I will explain, which is that I didn't really know I was going to do Nigella Express as a book. I had another book, which was a slightly bigger venture in the sense that it had a lot of research and little avenues to go down. But I was standing having a cup of tea in my kitchen, and I was looking down at my notes, because whenever I cook, I scribble down what I'm doing, or I dictate to one of the children, because I'm a great believer in child labour, as my mother was before me. And I suddenly thought, what am I doing? Here is my book, because these are all the recipes, if then they weren't strictly recipes, that I cook all the time, because I haven't got time to cook anything else. And that's how it evolved. But not only do I make notes all the time, but I take photographs of everything I cook, and I'm not even a very good photographer. And I'm one of those people who's very grateful for the digital age, because in the old days when you had to get your photos developed, I was always embarrassed that I'd go on vacation and I'd come back and maybe two pictures would be of the children and all the other pictures would be of meals I'd eaten, and I could see the man giving me back my photos thinking, what kind of a mother is this? So now at least it's only me, it's between me and my computer.
Nigella Lawson, as always, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Good luck with the book and with your next program.
Thank you so much.
The book is Nigella Express, 130 Recipes for Good Food Fast. Nigella Lawson joined us from BBC's Western House in London. Coming up, if you ever wept over Khalid Hosseini's best-selling novel, The Kite Runner, we've got a review of the movie for you from one of Afghanistan's frequent visitors, Peter Bergen. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.